Welcome, listeners, to the latest episode of Flipping the Switch, a podcast brought to you by the folks at Jones Onslow EMC. This is Steve Goodson, and I'm your host, and I'll be with you each month. I'll be sharing things about the co-op and what we're doing in the community, energy efficiency tips that you can use around the home, cool things that we're doing to assist our members to enhance customer service, and much more. So with that said, let's start flipping the switch. My first guest today is the co-op's energy expert, Charles Westmoreland. Charles, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, man. Glad to be here.
So summer's here, and we've been having some pretty warm weather over the past few weeks. And I know members have been, whether watching TV or laying in their beds, they've heard their AC running nonstop. So we're going to talk about some kind of DIY things that they can do to make their home more energy efficient. So one of these DIY things is they can walk around their home and give their home a quick energy inspection and pinpoint some potential problems that they can make some self-repairs, or they can potentially get someone to help them do it. So we're going to talk a little bit about those things. So the first one we're going to talk about is insulation. And specifically, let's talk about attic insulation. So what amount should we have in our homes for this climate?
The attic insulation, and that's a good point, Steve, is probably the most important area for insulation. I always give our membership an example, and I try to make it simple. If you're going to spend $100 on insulation, spend $75 in the attic. And the reason for that is that's where our largest source of heat loss and heat gain is at. It's easy to check. What you need in your attic is about 13 to 14 inches of insulation as far as the thickness goes. Whether it's blown or a bat style, it's easy to check. Just get you a ruler or yardstick and go up and find you a fairly level area and measure it with the yardstick. And if you're hitting anywhere near that, 12 to 14 inches, 13, 14, anywhere along there, you're in good shape.
Now you said bat style. I know obviously what blown in. Explain to folks what bat style
is. Right, sure. There's two types. They're both basically made out of the same material. You have blown insulation when they actually go up in the attic, Steve, with a big hose, and blow it out in the attic. It looks like snow. And the bat style, or the roll style, which you can buy at Lowe's or Home Depot, is usually roughly about 16. We can get a different width, 16 to 24 inches. So it lays down between the ceiling joists. And you can buy it in several different increments. And that's an important factor, because we'll just use a quick example. Let's say we got 6 inches up there. Say the home is 30 years old or older. At the time those homes were built, they only required 6 inches. That was the code. And what you could do, for instance, if you had a R19 up there, which would be a 6-inch bat, you could either add another 6-inch bat, or you could add a 3.5 to 4-inch bat, which would be like an R13. So you would have the R19 and the R13. Any of the increments, it would give you an R30. So it's very inexpensive. It's a lot of times it's where the homeowner can do it themselves, which saves a additional amount of money.
So it's pretty easy to do. Even I could do it. I could go to Lowe's.
Absolutely.
Buy this stuff, put it in the back of my car, and maybe pop up YouTube and watch a YouTube video about laying it out.
Yeah.
and do it.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It's just a weekend project.
Absolutely.
A Saturday afternoon project.
That's right. And again, even if we went with a contractor, with an insulation contractor, what I like about insulation is what I've always called a quick fix. It's a relatively inexpensive. I mean, you're looking, you know, $600 or $800. It's not like changing the HVAC system or things of that nature, where you're looking at thousands of dollars. I always tell our membership it's the biggest bang for the buck. It's relatively inexpensive, and you get a tremendous amount of performance out of it.
Caulking and weather stripping. I'm walking by my window on a cold night or on a warm day, and I kind of walk by a window or I walk by a door, and I feel a drastic change in temperature. So talk to me about caulking, weather stripping, where we should look at it. I just mentioned a couple places, and why we should do it.
Absolutely. It's another quick fix. It's another item that the homeowner themselves can do. And of course, as we all know, Anything we can do for ourselves is going to save us money. Basically, what we can do, you can go to a window and, as you just said, hold your hands up in front of it, whatever you need to do to see it, check for drafts. A lot of people will light a candle or a cigarette or even an old cigar and using it for a smoke element. And you can take a cigarette, for instance, and just, once you get it lit, hold it up around the window and see what direction the smoke blows. And if you've got wind coming in and it's blowing the smoke back into the house, then we know where it's coming from and we can seal the location. And they make many, many, many products at your home improvement stores. You can use caulk. They make weather stripping. It's almost endless what you can use. And it's very user-friendly to seal up anything around a window or a door or any place with these little nooks and crannies where we're getting wet. And it's called wind-driven infiltration. It's going to try to enter, and it's going to take the place of least resistance, which is a crack around a window or a door or anything like that. So, yeah, there's many, many products on the market. Go to the home supply stores and look at the products, and then you can pick and sort of choose. And most of the time, it's pretty obvious what you need.
One safety note. If you are choosing to use a candle or you choosing to use a cigarette or lighter,
be careful.
Make sure you don't have curtains around there. That's our safety input. It's a great way to detect wind and drafts and stuff like that, but be careful. Let's move on. A big energy user around the home. We don't really think about it, but it's a big energy user, your water heater. What can we do to maximize the energy efficiency of a water heater and your suggestion, the effectiveness when it goes to efficiency of a water heater? What's the lifespan of a good water heater, and when should we look at potentially replacing one?
On the average, I'm going to say, to put a number on it, I'm going to say 20 years. At that point, we need to start thinking about it, and location is critical. Now, if it's, and again, as you said already, Stevie, this is an out-of-sight, out-of-mind appliance, and it is an appliance, and it's one that we, as long as we turn the hot water faucet on and we get hot water, nobody thinks about it. But here's the mechanical side of it. Most of your standard water heaters that are used in residential homes have two 4,500 watt elements, one in the top, one in the bottom. They're not on at the same time, they rotate. But to give people a visual, I always tell them, anytime you're using hot water, such as in the shower or whatever, it's equivalent to having 45 100-watt light bulbs on at one time.
Wow.
Or 4.5 kW. So it's important, the temperature. They have two thermostats on them, one on the top element, one on the bottom. They need to be set no higher than 120 degrees. That's the sweet spot. That's the number that Energy Department recommends, and that's where most of the manufacturers recommend for them to operate at their most efficient stage. I have seen them set as high as 160. Usually what happens, you get a new water heater, it gets put in, and they never look at the temperature setting. So it's very easy to be overlooked. It's easy, again, this is another thing, with a little bit of knowledge, it's easy to check. Your water heaters, especially if they're located in an easy access area like a garage or in maybe in a closet in the house, they'll have two doors or two little metal places on them.
Plate covers.
Exactly. Yeah. And the first thing we want to do is go to the electric panel and determine the breaker. Most all of them are 30-amp breakers. Turn the breaker off first because we don't want to have any contact with any form of electricity. Open those two lids, and then it's very easy to see. There's a little dial there, and it'll have an arrow on it. It'll be pointing to the temperature. So you want to set it on, you can take a small screwdriver and set it on 120 degrees, and then button it back up and turn the breaker back on, top and bottom. The other thing is, if it is in, as I was talking about, if it's in a garage, it's in an unconditioned area. So in the wintertime, it's going to be in a cold environment. So at that point, I would recommend putting a blanket around it. And these can be purchased. It's an insulation blanket. They can be purchased at Lowe's or Home Depot or any of your home supply stores. And simply take a roll of duct tape and that blanket and wrap that thing up after we've set the thermostats. wrap it up and insulate it the best you can. And that will make a tremendous difference in the wintertime.
Okay, so we've talked about insulation, and I can do that. I'm not a, for those folks maybe listening for the first time, I'm not mechanically inclined. I'm not a home do-it-yourselfer, but insulation, I can do that. The weather stripping and caulking, I can do that. The water heater, I can definitely wrap it. We're pushing my limits, potentially checking the breaker and taking the plate off and adjusting it, but I probably can do that.
You got me, so you don't have to worry about
that. Okay, I got you to help me with that. So anyway, okay, last thing. Both episodes that you've been on, Flipping the Switch, this podcast, we talked about our heating and cooling system. What can folks do to make sure their systems run as efficiently as possible?
I'm sure we've covered this before, but we're going to backtrack a little bit. The first thing we want to do, again, I, as a general rule, I recommend spring and fall. Have your serviceman come out and check everything. If you're not going to do it twice a year, do it in the fall. The reason for that is if something happens in the wintertime, you have a backup source with a heat pump called the auxiliary heat or heat strips. And these things can come on if something happens to the heat pump and you not be aware of it until you get an electric bill that's about four times what it normally is. So I tell people, check them in the fall, and that way going into the heating system, at least you've put your best foot forward. We know everything's in good shape going in. But they do need to be serviced. You wouldn't think about driving your car to the West Coast without changing the oil in it. So we don't want these things to sit out there 4 or 5 years with not having anybody look at them or check them. So they need to be maintenanced on a regular basis, twice a year if possible. And again, we'll go back to those filters again. We talk about that every time. I know everybody's getting tired of hearing about it, but that is the most important thing that you can do. And again, the homeowner can do it. So it's very cheap. It's easy to do. It's just a process of trying to remember. Everybody's got a busy house nowadays, and these things are very easily overlooked. But a good way to remember it, as I said before, is every time you get a bill from us, from your utility company, remember to run and change that filter. Even if it looks like it doesn't need it, change it anyway. They're very inexpensive, and it's just the best thing you can do for a system. Let's just talk about the refrigerant for a minute. You may have a 3-ton unit in your house, but if you lose a pound or so of refrigerant, that unit becomes a 2.5-ton or a 2-ton unit. And now we're talking about an undersized unit, which we've talked before on the show, that can create a lot of problems, but it's also running continuously using energy that it doesn't need to use. So that's where maintenance and having these things checked twice a year really pays off.
So easy, walk around your house, do-it-yourself, home energy inspection, attic insulation, caulking, weather stripping, your water heater, and then, of course, your HVAC unit. Chuck, great information as usual. Thank you for joining me today. I know you will be back probably next month because we believe on educating our members about energy efficiency around their home, things that we can help them do to maximize their energy dollars and to help them use energy more efficiently. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Glad to be here, man.
Great. Next up, are you inspired by someone who's making a big difference in our community? Well, you can share their story and they could receive national recognition from Touchstone Energy. We'll be right back.
Turn up the energy savings in your home this year by turning on your ceiling fans. Ceiling fans help our indoor life feel more comfortable. They are a decorative addition to our homes and, if used properly, can help lower energy costs. One tip is to flip the switch. Most ceiling fans have a switch near the blades. In warm months, flip the switch so that the blades operate in a counterclockwise direction, effectively producing a wind chill effect. Fans make the air near them feel cooler than it actually is. In winter, move the switch so the fan blades rotate clockwise, creating a gentle updraft. This pushes warm air down from the ceiling into occupied areas of the room. Regardless of the season, try operating the fan on its lowest setting. For more tips on using your ceiling fans to lower your energy costs, visit joemc.com.
All right, here we go, folks. So, Don't know if you've noticed or not, but when Jones Onslow advertises or you see Jones Onslow's logo, below our logo, you see these three guys holding hands and you see the words out beside it, a Touchstone Energy Cooperative. So I kind of wanted to tell you a little bit more what Touchstone Energy was. So Touchstone Energy, it's a nationwide alliance of 750 electric cooperatives, obviously nationwide, and Jones Onslow is a part of that. Touchstone Energy Cooperatives collectively provide power and energy solutions to more than 30 million members across 46 of our 50 states. So today, I'm extremely pleased to have Mary Ann Cristiano, Director of Marketing, Advertising, and Digital from Touchstone Energy with me to talk about an exciting contest that has geared up. It started the first part of August, and I'm going to let Mary Ann talk a little bit more about it. So Mary Ann, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Steve. I really appreciate you asking me to talk about our contest. It's our fourth year, and it's a social media contest where a member nominates a person for their efforts in making a difference in their community. We started initially to engage our cooperatives in a contest that would recognize local heroes. And that was really the focus, and to also tie into our principle of co-op communities.
That's great. So give me a few details about the program. It started first part of August, I think August 5th. Tell me what folks can do to get involved. Obviously, there'll be a lot of social media promotion on Jones Onslow's end, on Touchstone Energy's end, but tell me how someone can participate, whether they can self-nominate or nominate someone, and the process and where they might go to do that.
Sure. You can participate by going to whopowersyou.com, and you submit a photo, a brief description of what that person has done in the community that has made a difference, or a local hero making a positive impact, which is really key to the nomination, is how they have influenced and changed or added to the community in some way or form. The contest runs for 5 weeks until September 6th, and only Touchstone Energy Cooperative members and employees are eligible to enter a member. So they nominate a member, but Touchstone Energy employees are not eligible to be a nominee.
Okay. If I know someone in my community that I just think's killing it and doing some really great things, I can nominate that person and write up the narrative.
Yes. In fact, most of our nominees do come from co-op members who know their membership base, yeah, and they nominate somebody from their community.
That's awesome. So after the nominations close September 6th, what's the time frame? When will these folks be notified normally?
Sure. After that time frame, we have a panel of judges who actually review all the nominations. And once we do that, we notify the winners. We notify the co-op first that their nominee has been chosen as a winner. It usually takes about a month until we can wrap everything up, because we need to send like W-9s and different things, because there's prize money here.
You're given money, you got to send a W-9, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And there's big prize money here. There's the grand prize is $5,000, the second place winner is $2,000, the third place is $1,500, and honorable mention is $500. And the reason for those amounts is so that these people can then go and further their cause.
That's awesome. So I'm going to go a little bit out of order here, because I think that's a great lead-in. So we've got folks listening. Jones Onslow hasn't participated in the past, but I'm not going to ask you that question. I'm going to ask you, so you talked about the levels of prizes, and they can take that money and then implement it back into their program. So give me some examples. This is going to be the fourth year of the contest. Give me some past examples of folks that have won and what they're doing in their community to make a difference.
Sure. We've had a lot of inspiring nominations and winners in the contest. Some winners have created specific places that have allowed people to feel like they belong to the community, such as training centers, lodges, or parks, or providing donations to those in need. So this year, our grand prize winners created a training center to help disabled adults learn a skill set so they could find jobs. Last year, we had a winner who created Clothing Our Kids organization that provided clothes to more than 11,000 children.
Wow.
Others have built group homes for abused children or created backpacks for foster children so they didn't have to use a garbage bag for their belongings. Another winner created a dog rescue and saved more than 600 dogs. Mm. Another winner created the Inspiring Project to help stop bullying and impacted over 100,000 youth.
So again, this is Jones Onslow's first year doing this. So has this been well received so far, the first 3 years? Number of co-ops maybe that have participated, the number of applications that we may have had in the past,
roughly? Sure. We started out our first year, we had 62 nominations. Last year, we had 301 nominations.
Wow.
So it's really grown.
Exponentially over 3 years. Wow.
Co-op participation continues to grow. Last year, we had the most nominations came from Virginia, South Carolina, Kentucky, and Indiana. Each year, it changes a little bit based on who's submitting. But Virginia alone, I believe, had 53 nominations.
Wow. That's great. Well, you know, this again, you mentioned it in the opening, this goes back to one of the seven co-op principles, commitment to community. There's no better way to recognize what folks are doing in our community, but by nominating them and potentially putting them in the forefront and saying, hey, because a lot of times it's a thankless job and you do it out of passion and you do it because you care about something. You may have had a situation in your life or you may just had something that's happened. And so you do it out of passion and you're not doing it for recognition. But on occasion, if someone can recognize you for what you're doing, it's a good thing. We're excited about the program because we know in our community we've got some ordinary folks that are doing some extraordinary things. So we're going to have some nominees. So just remember, the contest started earlier this month and it will run through September 6th. And for more information, go to whopowersyou.com. So Marianne, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Steve. And we're really looking forward to the nominations from your area.
Inspired by someone making a difference in our community? We'll celebrate them with JOEMC and Touchstone Energy in the Who Powers You contest. Nominate an unsung hero by visiting whopowersyou.com. In addition to being nationally recognized, nominees can win up to $5,000 for the cause they champion. Contest ends September 6th. Only members of Touchstone Energy Cooperatives like JOEMC are eligible to win. Help us celebrate those people making a powerful and lasting impact on their community and nominate them today. For more information, visit whopowersyou.com.
We're back for the last segment of Flipping the Switch. Before we bring on our next guest, I wanted to let folks know about a couple of great community initiatives that we're kicking off this month. First, school's right around the corner. Educators, you know what that means. 2019-2020 Bright Idea grant applications are now being accepted. You can go to joemc.com/brightideas2019. I'm going to repeat that. joemc.com/brightideas2019. At this page on our website, you'll find the application. You'll find rules, guidelines, and you'll find application deadlines. So educators, if you have a bright idea that you want to try to implement into the classroom, go here, fill out an application, and tell us what your bright idea is, and you might win some money to make that happen. Next, the co-op is partnering this fall again with the high schools, specifically this time the high school football teams, and we're going to be bringing you Touchstone Tailgate, and it's pretty simple. We're going to have 5 tailgates at high school football games in our area this fall. They'll be before the opening kickoff of each game, and fans can stop by, look for the JOEMC tent, and stop by, see us, grab some free food, listen to music, and just hang out with us. Great community event. Everybody loves football, I think. I know I do. But stop by, see us, and just hang out. The first tailgate will be Friday, August 30th at Jacksonville High School, and it'll start at 5:45 p.m. Jacksonville will host East Duplin that night. Other dates, Friday, September 6th, Swansboro at Richlands. Friday, September 27th, Dixon at Southwest. Friday, October 25th, Jones Senior hosts Southside. And Friday, November 8th, Northside at White Oak. So we're really looking forward to this. We hope that it catches on this fall. If it does, and the high schools that didn't host an event this year, you guys will host an event next year. So that would be Swansboro, Dixon, East Duplin, and Northside. So we're really looking forward to this. Come on out. If you like high school football, come out, support your local high school team, and hang out with Jones Onslow employees. All right. Our next guest is the co-op safety manager, Chris Banks. And we're going to talk a little bit about portable generator safety with Chris. So, Chris, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here today.
All right, Chris. So we know hurricane season started June 1st. And for our area, August, September have historically been busy months. You know all too well because before coming into your position as safety manager, you were a lineman.
That's right. That's yes, right. Sir.
So a lot of folks are either thinking about purchasing or already have a portable generator. So we're going to talk a little bit about portable generator safety. Sound good?
Yes, sir.
All right. So before we get into portable generator safety, explain to our listeners what's the difference between a standby generator and a portable generator.
Okay. A standby generator is a generator that is permanently installed outside of a home, and it turns on automatically when the power goes off. So it's already wired up to your house in your breaker panel and automatically turns on when the power goes off.
And it's and that is done through a transfer switch that normally, and well, we recommend, and I think it's probably required by code, a licensed electrician normally comes out and installs some sort of either an automatic transfer switch or sometimes a manual transfer switch, correct?
Yes, sir. When they install those generators, they do all that.
Portable generator is just what it sounds like. It's you can go to a big box store, buy one of these little small units. It looks like a kind of a pressure washer type thing or something like that, and you can drag it in and out as needed.
Yes, sir.
All right.
It's a generator that can go from location to location, and you're going to start it manually, and you're going to actually plug your appliances into that generator.
All right, perfect. So let's say I decide I don't really need one because when a hurricane occurs or a power outage occurs, I'm here at work.
That's
but
right.
Let's just say I'm taking care of my wife. So let's just say I want to go to one of the big box stores and I want to buy a portable generator. What size am I going to need if I want to plug in like my refrigerator, a television, some fans, or some other things?
Normally, a generator that is between the sizes of 3,000 to 6,500 watts will run most of your household appliances. Of course, you're not going to be able to run everything in your house off of these generators, but you can get your main appliances back on.
Definitely want to try to keep your refrigerator plugged in to kind of keep your food potentially cool or whatever, so the refrigerator doesn't warm up or whatever and spoil your food. And obviously, if the power's out, you want to try to get some fans going or whatever. People want televisions to see what's going on, assuming that the cable or DirecTV or whatever you have is, you know, is going.
Yes.
So, okay, good deal. So you mentioned something just a second ago. You plug your appliances into the generator, or you take a heavy duty extension cord or whatever. So you don't plug this portable generator directly into one of your home outlets?
No, sir. That's not recommended. If you do plug your portable generator into a wall outlet, you're applying the direct current and you're bypassing your breakers or fuses in your actual breaker panel in your house, and possibly putting back feed onto our system.
That's what I want to talk about. Explain to our listeners the precautions that they need to take when using, whether it's a standby generator or a portable generator, and putting electricity back on our lines and the potential hazard that that causes for our linemen.
Yes, sir.
When they're trying to restore power.
Yes, sir. On these standby generators, the transfer switch, like you just mentioned, is what breaks the current from coming back through the meter and going onto the system where the linemen are working. So if there's backfeed on the system, we think the power's out as a lineman, and we can actually have the potential of being electrocuted from the current from your house coming back onto our lines.
Just really want to caution folks, whether it's a standby generator, whether it's a portable generator, if you have any questions or concerns about how to hook that thing up, we would be more than happy to talk with you. You can call here and someone here at the office will give you advice, give you guidance about how to hook it up, because in the end, we love folks to have these things so they can be comfortable while we're trying to restore power, but they could potentially be an extremely hazardous situation for our linemen, correct?
That's right. Yes, sir, that's right.
So let's talk about, last question, just talk about real quickly, top safety things. We talked about the transfer switch and we talked about not plugging into outlets. But let's just talk about a couple of common sense things that folks may not think about. Top safety things to remember with a portable generator.
Portable generators, you always want to have them outside when you try to start the generators. When they're running, you want them outside in a well-ventilated area.
Because they are gas or potential diesel or something driven.
That's right. Okay. Yes, sir.
All right.
Also, when you refuel your generator, you want that generator to be off and you want it to have cooled down. So you're not pouring, like you said, gasoline, diesel, into something that's already hot and could possibly ignite.
Okay.
Another thing is, you know, definitely during the summer months, during these storms, you're going to have rain, wet conditions. You don't want to operate a generator in the rain. You want to make sure that if you can put it under a shelter or something in that case, you don't want to have it sitting in water when you have this thing running. You want to make sure that it's in a dry area. So,
last thing, we talked real briefly about it, extension cords. So the extension cord I may use to plug up my Christmas tree lights is not necessarily the same extension cord I'm going to potentially use with this portable generator, right? It needs to be sized correctly. Is that?
That's right. Yes, sir. You need to make sure you have the right size, proper size, and a proper extension cord. You don't want to have an indoor cord that you're going to be having, you're running outside, have an outside cord that is properly rated to run your appliances.
That's great tips. Chris, thank you. And listen, again, folks, we just really encourage you, if you have any questions when you go to purchase a portable generator, or if you have any questions about after you purchase the generator, about its use, we welcome a call. We welcome an email. We welcome a phone call, because it's something that's extremely important to us, extremely important to our linemen, and them trying to restore power as quickly and as safely to you guys as possible. So if you want to learn more about generator safety, you can go to our website, joemc.com, and look under the Energy Center tab at the top of the page. Under Energy Center, we have a whole section of different safety tips. We've got things about power blinks, call before you dig, generator safety, safety around transformers, and things like that. So if you have any questions, again, you can call us or you can go out to the website. Chris, thanks for joining me, man.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. Well, folks, that's going to do it for this episode of Flipping the Switch. Remember, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, all those social media channels. In the next few weeks, we'll be providing more information about the Who Powers You contest. We'll be bringing you more information about the Bright Ideas program, as well as the really cool community partnership that we've got with the local high schools, Touchstone Tailgate. So we're really looking forward to all three of those community-based events. So if you have any comments about this show, just send us an email. And that email is podcast@joemc.com. That's podcast@joemc.com. So thanks again for listening, and we hope you tune in next month.